Hello, this is Brian Madden, and you're listening to Brian Madden Live. Citrix's memory optimization management, RTOT scale, DLL memory address rebasing, these are all technologies that allow you to fit more users on a busy server. But how do these technologies really work? To find out, we'll talk with the technology's creator, Kevin Goodman. This week's show is going to be with the topic that's a lot of people have been talking about for a lot of years, and that's the memory optimization management, or DLL rebasing. This is technology that, for all intents and purposes, was invented by RTO Software several years ago. Back in the days, there was a company called KevSoft, and KevSoft had a product called T-Scale. A lot of terminal server and Citrix administrators used the T-Scale product without really knowing how it worked. From my personal experience, you know, all I knew is this was some kind of software product. I installed it onto my terminal servers. It performed some kind of voodoo magic to make my applications on my terminal servers take less memory than they used to take. And that was pretty much it. So actually joining us by telephone from Alpharetta, Georgia, is Kevin Goodman. Kevin's the president and CEO of RTO Software. It was formerly KevSoft when he started the company several years ago. And Kevin basically created this technology for Windows Terminal Server and Citrix environments. So first of all, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Brian.
So let's jump right into it. In the way I kind of introduced this, this DLL rebasing, memory address mapping, memory optimization, whatever you want to call it, from my experience, as I said, all I know is that some kind of software, I install it onto a terminal server, and it makes my applications take less memory. As far as I can tell, it's black magic. So can you just take us through a little bit sort of what's going on and what the software and what this technology actually does?
Absolutely. Let me take you back a couple of years, though, and give you some background. Back when Windows NT was first conceived, for some of us old enough to remember, it was actually called Portable OS 2, and some people thought it would actually ship as OS 2 3.0. And one of the things, one of the features it had in it was this portable executable file format. And the idea behind the portable executable file format would be that whether you were running on a MIPS machine, a DEC Alpha machine, or some type of Intel class machine, one operating system was going to be able to read all the file formats and bring this program into memory in a consistent manner. To do that, they came up with this portable executable file format, shortened to PE format, which still exists today. One of the benefits of this PE file format was the fact that, and just to go back even farther, back in Windows 3.1, what would happen, the operating system would load your program and load the entire program into memory and then start executing it. And that was inefficient. One of the things that they fixed is the fact that you don't have to load an entire program in Windows into memory at once. You do something called memory mapping, which is where you take your virtual address space and you just reserve memory for all these DLLs or other pieces of program code that you're going to load into the system. And at the time when you actually come across the piece that you're going to load, the memory would be reserved, but it won't be in memory, so you'll get what's known as a page fault, and which time it'll go out to the disk and it'll read in, let's, for argument's sake, say a DLL's page out of a DLL. This works all fine and well, except for one instance. When developers create these DLLs, they have a piece in there called a preferred base address, and the idea behind that is, if you could, at compile time, if you're a developer, tell the operating system where you wanted to load in this virtual address space, then all that Windows would have to do would be to memory map it and move on. The problem happens, though, and it's exacerbated in terminal services, but the problem exists in every version of Windows, including your laptop that you have today, is that two owners of DLLs sometimes pick the same address to load their DLL at. When that happens, you get into a situation known as relocation. the operating system will have to go through, and if the memory is already taken by a DLL, when DLL number 2 comes in, the operation has to go through and move it to a different place in memory. Now, what happens is, in a situation where you don't relocate, you get a very efficient load, and DLLs were meant to be run by more than one program, all the way down to kernel 32 DLL, GDI 32 DLL. They were all meant to be run by more than one program. In the situation where you get a relocation, though, what happens is the operating system has to do a phenomenon known as copy-on-write. Because he's relocated or rewritten this memory to a different location, he can no longer go back to the original DLL and get it off a disk if you get in a memory overcommit situation. So in the situation where the DLLs load correctly, DLL A loads, let's say, at base address 256 meg, and DLL B loads at 300 meg, you got a quick, fast, efficient system. In the situation where they're both at this 256 meg, there is a whole litany of items that the Windows loader has to go through to get the second DLL in memory. Let's say your DLL provides a function to put up a message box that says, hello world. You have to store that string. Programmers are very familiar with this. You have to store that string somewhere in the memory of your program. And when the compiler and linker do their magic, what they do is they pick that base address we were talking about and an offset. It's known as a relative virtual address plus the offset. Well, what happens is, as each instruction down in assembly language goes, it may turn into go to address 400789123. All right. That's if you load it at 256 meg. If you have to load at a different address, Windows has to go in and change that number, that address, to wherever your new location is. As soon as you write to what was previously read-only data, you get this phenomenon known as copy-on-write, and it causes them to have to write that page, back and copy that out into the page file. So the problem that you see when you have a lot of relocations is high page file usage. Now, high page file usage is directly related to scalability. If you bring up your task manager, and just the one, even the one you have on your laptop, and you look down at that commit charge, what he's showing you there are two numbers. On mine, it's a 650 meg for the first number and 1449 meg for the second number. That is how much you've written off in the page file. So each page of relocations that happens bumps up that first number of commit charge. When those two numbers get to be together, you're out of virtual memory, and you know you can't get any more users on there. The more you lower that number, then the more users you can get on the system. So, as they say in the in patent terminology, there remains a need to solve this problem, and that's what T-Scale does. T-Scale sits in memory, watches all the apps that are out there, enumerates all of their DLLs that are loaded, and then does a quick comparison. Where were they loaded in memory versus where their base address is on disk? And collects all that information up and saves it off into a file. Then once a day or twice a day, depending on how you schedule it, an optimization routine reads that file and then physically goes and changes the base address of the DLL to the address where it was loaded in memory. Now, for security reasons and stuff like that, we don't actually change the primary copy of your DLL. What we'll do is we'll write it out to an alternate stream. And the reason we do that is there's so many programs out there that are doing integrity checking based on when the last time the DLL was written to and things like that. And so what we'll do is we'll write it to an alternate stream. One way to see if your program needs or has relocations is to use a couple of simple tools from sysinternals. One of those is called Process Explorer. If you bring up Process Explorer and then go to the view, lower pane view, and change it to DLLs, Process Explorer will show you all of the DLLs that have been relocated. very quickly. So if you're a T-Scale user or a CPS 4.0 user, you can bring up Process Explorer, wander through some of the applications that you have on your system, look in that lower pane view, and see if those you have relocations. If so, you should turn on the memory optimization management. If you have CPS 4.0, if not, use something like T-Scale. Or if you're really rambunctious, I'll show you a way how to do this manually. Okay, you referred to this as the DLL rebasing technology. Microsoft actually ships a free tool called Rebase. You can go and look, see where your DLL has been loaded. This works perfectly, Brian, if you have in-house applications. All right. So if you're a Citrix administrator and you got in-house applications, you're serving them up on Citrix, and you look in Process Explorer and see all those relocations, first thing I'd do is shoot off a memo down to your development department, say, guys, get with the program. There's a tool from Microsoft called Rebase, basically manually does what T-Scale does programmatically.
Yeah, but our developers would love to have an email from the admin telling them how to develop their applications better.
Yeah, if I was a Citrix administrator and was sitting there and they're complaining to me about, wow, we're getting poor scalability, wow, we're getting lousy response, you guys need to upgrade your hardware, I'd love to fire back with, well, you know, guys, if you wrote it more efficiently and here's a suggestion on how, then we'd probably get a lot more scalability.
We'll have to work together after this show and sort of draft a demo. Memo to be used as a template or something. And,
yeah, there we go. And you know what? What it needs to be done is signed as Brian Madden, because we got careers we're worried about here.
Oh,
we
I was actually thinking of signing as
trouble.
Kevin.
Yeah,
and I would just post it.
Yeah, there you go.
So let me back up for a second. So the base address, that's actually hard-coded into the DLL file itself.
It is. And another tool that comes, actually, if any of your guys out there have any development tools like VB or Visual Studio installed, you can actually see that base address, what it is, by running a simple command line utility that comes with all the compilers called dump in. And what we ought to do is post up the command line that you need
we'll
to do.
Yeah, we'll do that in the program notes.
Or if you have one of those PE file readers, which that, you know, they give away for free on lots of sites and stuff, in which you can inspect a PE header. What you're looking for is the image address, is what they call it, and it's your base address, and it's set at compile time. So one of the things is, okay, so you've got an internal app, and you have 15 DLLs on it, and the default base address is always 256 meg, and you don't change the default. As soon as you ship your address, it's not going to work as efficiently as possible on terminal services because of these relocations. Memory optimization management, CPS 4.0, one of the benefits is imagine this situation. Okay, I am a developer at Microsoft, or a team of developers at Microsoft, and I've produced the MS XML DLL. This is the DLL to parse XML code. And it originally ships with IE. And so, conveniently, you'll notice Microsoft apps are all perfectly rebased. And they know this problem. They talk to each other, so they figured out a way to optimize it. What happens is the developer of this XML DLL found a place. It wasn't at 256 meg, by the way. He found a place in which it would not relocate inside IE. Okay, great. Now look at the problem, though, is they... XML became so popular, they also use it in Office. So it's also in Excel, and it's also in Word. It's also in PowerPoint. Now tell me which address he's supposed to pick at compile time. There's no way to know. So you pick the most popular one that you think is going to be used in IE, and then the other ones, it just relocates. Well, what memory optimization management does is find a place that's convenient for all of them. And let's say, if it's a DLL that's also used by third parties, which a lot of Microsoft DLLs are, then what memory optimization management does is rebases it to a location that'll fit in all of those technologies. So, you have a situation where if you have an internal app, you might tune it yourself, but if you're using third-party components, there's no way that those third-party components can know ahead of time. That's where the name RTO comes from, by the way. That stands for runtime optimization.
So really, this is kind of why, I guess, sort of the system could get sort of better and better at the optimization, where perhaps the system watches, or the software, I guess the T-Scale software watches the system for, let's say, a day, and it looks at what DLLs have been loaded, and it remaps them, so they've got different addresses, and then maybe on day two, a new application is launched that wasn't launched the first day, and that happens to use one of the addresses that was used before, so then it has to sort of rewrite the optimization map so that everyone is put to different places.
Yeah, so if you go in and look at either the T-Scale data files or the Citrix data files, they all have an .sfo extension. What that stands for is search for optimality. And so what's going on is it's a continuous search looking to make sure that every DLL has a place. I mean, we've got a 2 gigabyte address space, so there's a darn good chance we can find something, a place for each and every DLL to land.
So one thing I'm a little bit confused on, I guess, so what we're actually doing here is we're protecting DLLs from other DLLs. It's not necessarily a terminal server issue in the sense that if one DLL is used by multiple users, let's say it's something like Word or JD Edwards or whatever program, and we've got 50 users on a terminal server. So is the issue because we have 50 copies, or I should say 50 users running the software, 50 copies of the software loading, or is the issue more because within each session, the multiple DLLs are kind of stepping on each other?
Well, the fact of the matter is this problem exists even on all versions of Windows. It's just exacerbated in terminal services because now you have a situation of, you know, we have this one DLL, and pick Word or JD Edwards loads it for user one, and it causes a relocation, and let's say it causes 20 pages to be written out to the page file. User 2 comes along, that's another 20 pages. You know, users 3 through N, it's, you know, N times 20 pages, you know, each for each user. So the problem really just exacerbates itself on terminal services because you have so many users running the same program. Now, on your desktop, you probably don't run 4 or 5 copies of one app.
Not on purpose.
You know. So you don't. You might not see the damage as far, but on terminal services, especially with an app like Lotus Notes client or something like that, you know, you're going to have 40 users of it, and or however many that are on the terminal service, and if each of the DLLs in that application each causes a whole bunch of relocations, you know, it's times the number of users is the problem, and the scalability, if you think about it. It's not a hard and set rule about how many users can fit on a box. A lot of it has to do with perception. Okay, wow! If I bring up another copy of an app and I switch from this app to that app in my desktop session, and it's speedy, well, I everything's okay. I wouldn't mind if another user came onto the system. But if it's slow, and part of the reason is if you get into a memory overcommit situation. Now what we're doing is we're going back out to the page file and reading in all those code pages, which we wouldn't have had to read in the situation where everything relocated correctly. So it's actually a performance boost on a heavily loaded system. With that in mind, if the system's running snappy, you'll put on a couple more users. In addition to having more virtual memory, when it is at its peak virtual memory load, everybody's going to be running better because you're not going to be hitting the page file as much.
So on that page file, that brings up an interesting question. How about these products out there, and I guess Tigi is the one that's most familiar to me, that are basically solid-state hard drives. So you've got a box that looks and feels like a hard drive, but it has sort of RAM inside it instead of a physical disk. And with the idea being is that you buy this thing in maybe 6 or 8 gigabyte size, plug it into your server, and then use it for the drive where you store your page file, and then the page file can run at the sort of SCSI bus speed as opposed to the slow drive speed. Is there any way, I mean, is that something that if you had one of these solid-state hard drives, you would not need this technology, or do they Is it one or the other, or is what if it happens,
actually,
is it both?
I think they complement each other. Okay, so what you're basically doing is effectively, right, is you're putting the page file into memory. I mean, it's running almost as fast,
right? Yeah.
And so you're not being penalized so much for the write time, but in the situations where, you know, there's only so much virtual memory, you'd still be penalized for how much you're taking up. So obviously the ideal situation for increasing scalability is as much physical RAM as you can afford. And this is for increasing scaling up, right? As much physical RAM as you can put in the box, having as fast a disk as possible, which includes, if you want to have a solid-state hard disk, and to doing as few relocations as possible. You know, that is the ideal environment right there.
And that is sort of an architectural, well, I guess it picks up both. It's sort of changing the architecture so you're using as efficiently as possible. And then when you do have to bring in the inefficiencies, it makes those inefficiencies very speedy.
Yes. And what I, in addition to the solution like a solid-state hard drive, it's my understanding that on Windows 2003, you've got the capability of using memory above 4 gigabytes. As for your page file as well. And so you certainly have that situation there. There have been some suggestions on some peer support groups of getting one of Microsoft's RAM disk drivers, so to speak, and using it to put your page file on there. But I don't recommend that.
I haven't I haven't looked at that in a while. I thought there was an issue because those are not initialized until after the system is, and by that point it's too late for a page file.
Well, actually, depending on how you write it, you could do it. But here's the problem, okay? You're reducing your amount of physical memory to increase your amount of virtual memory. So it's a wash. Plus, you have overhead of the reading and writing.
Right. So
it doesn't make sense.
It moves a line, but you're still RAM is RAM, right? So
yeah.
If we run out of RAM, that's cool because we're moving it to RAM, which if we didn't have that as a page file in memory, we wouldn't need it in the first place. So
it's
kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like a catch-22.
That's so totally. That's totally a discussion board topic of a flame war kind of thing. I would imagine.
Oh yeah. It off the top of your head, it sounds like a great idea. But when you get down and think about it, there's better solutions.
Right. Right. That. Okay.
Yeah. So other thing that if you want to think about is 64-bit as well. You think, wow, now I've got these terabyte address space. Do I really need to make sure my apps are rebased correctly? And the answer is emphatically yes, because now you got this big, wide processor, and you got this gobs of physical RAM that you can use. And what happens? You're being blocked by writing out to the page file again for all of these relocations. So you're at iForum. Scotland, weren't you?
Yeah.
Did you see Citrix was showing an early preview? They were showing the 64-bit version, which had the 64-bit memory optimization management included in that. And that works 32-bit apps, and the same process is taking place for the 64-bit apps. You can still have relocations in 64-bit apps, and they're still every bit as painful. So
what happens? So in this case, I guess we've got two things here. First of all, so for 64-bit Windows, there's a 64-bit version of T-Scale, is that right? And then the 64-bit version of T-Scale can optimize both 64-bit as well as 32-bit applications.
That's correct.
Okay, and let's kind of, while we're talking about Citrix, let's kind of look at this, because I know a lot of people that I talk to are pretty much aware, or I guess if not, you'll be aware now. So RTO software licensed the T-Scale technology to Citrix, and Citrix has built that capability into Presentation Server version 4, which
was
released, I don't know what, April of this year, so three, four months ago.
We just announced, I don't know if you heard it, we just announced, you know, we received a patent on this, and Citrix licensed that patent from us.
So this is an additional... This license is in addition to what they announced a year ago.
Yeah. So we just announced that Citrix licensed the patent from us. So
tell me about. Okay. So let me ask about this. First of all, So Citrix licensed this technology from you. What does that actually mean? Does that mean you showed Citrix how to write it, or does that mean T-Scale is built into Citrix, or how does that, you know?
The latter is correct. Over the past year and a half, RTO has been working very closely with Citrix, weekly meetings, trips down to Fort Lauderdale, in which we actually integrated this technology into CPS 4.0. So it's an integral part. It's part of CPS 4.0. It's not just an add-on or anything like that. It comes with your install, and you can get rudimentary reports from it. And
so what's missing with that? Because I know, first of all, this is only in the enterprise edition of Presentation Server, and I think it's also included in the light version, the Citrix Access Essentials. But so if I'm using Presentation Server 4 and I go into the Citrix Management Console, or whatever they're calling it these days, and I know that I can, there's a checkbox basically that sort of says enable, whatever they call it, enable
memory optimization management.
Right. Yeah. So enable this or disable it, that's it. Versus the T-Scale product from RTO has a whole little GUI thing, and I can make all sorts of advanced settings and that kind of stuff. So
yeah. So here's what's happening. You're going to be able to download those GUI settings from RTO and put them on your server, and actually be able to download those for free, and manage the exclusion lists and manage any of the other settings that you have in there, and you'll be able to put that on your Citrix server and get the reports that you're used to seeing from T-Scale. You'll be able to download that from RTO and get that for free. And then what RTO is hoping is that you'll like it enough that you'll want to sit at your desk and manage all your servers. And if that's so, then we've got a version that we'll sell to you that is a single console multi-server tool.
Okay.
And then we have a few other things that we're going to add on top of that. So. That, you know, make it worth your while.
And you said manage exclusions.
I
can use the GUI to manage exclusions.
Let's go into why there's an exclusion list.
Yeah, yeah.
There are certain DLLs that this technology rebasing isn't suited for. Certain of those DLLs are, imagine you have built your own security in, or imagine you're doing a digitally signed product in which you want to lock your DLL the way you shipped it, and you don't want anybody to make any changes to it. You can do two things in that PE header file format that we were talking about. You can flip a flag that says don't make any changes to me. They call it the no bind flag, and we'll honor that, and we won't optimize those files. There are others who don't want you to manipulate you don't want it optimized, that will not do that flag. And what happens is when that takes place, we have to look at those manually. And during our optimization process, we'll actually check to see if it loads or not correctly. So when our optimization routine is running, in the background, we're actually testing out DLLs to see if they are suitable for optimization. And if not, we'll actually create a registry entry and put that in there. So the next time it relocates, the service that's busy looking at processes won't bother looking at that DLL and writing it out to the SFO file and, you know, trying to optimize it the next time. And then there are certain applications just in general. For example, as long as I've been looking at this stuff, the client-server runtime subsystem has never needed any optimizations. So there are certain applications you can put in an exclusion list as well, in which you say, you know what, I know this guy's not going to need it, so just don't bother looking at him. You know, don't waste the cycles in even checking on this guy, because we know for a fact it's never going to need relocations. So those two lists, basically, if you're in memory optimization management, it's not very convenient to, especially in a multi-server, if you have a whole farm, it's not convenient to manage those exclusion lists. And there's a third situation where you might have an application that's out there that, let's face it, if it's relocating out on a customer's desktop, it probably relocated in QA, which means that these developers don't understand the ramifications of relocations, which means they didn't test it. So if we optimize it and it starts running too fast, there are applications that we've uncovered race conditions in, conditions that were never seen in their lab during their testing, and now out in the field are showing up because we optimized them. After we notice that, you can manually put that application or the DLL that's causing the problems into the exclusion list, and we won't optimize that any in the future.
And so that's what the download from RTO's website allows you to also do that if you are a presentation server customer from Citrix.
That's right. Yeah. So if you and we have a couple of tools that we can use because sometimes you have to diagnose. Did I just come across a race condition? I just optimized my app, and you know the nine other apps that I optimized just started working great. This one's acting a little funny. So what you don't want to do is penalize yourself for the nine apps that are working great. Let's put this one in the exclusion list and see if it was the optimizations. Maybe we did speed it up too much, you know, and it burned up on reentry. So let's go ahead and take that one out of the list, leave the others in the list. And we think that's going to be something that especially CPS 4.0 customers are going to want to have. You're going to have a list of, you know, 20 apps that end up getting optimized, and there may be one that causes a problem. And what's the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to say, well, did you make any changes? Well, yeah, memory optimization optimized it. Well, turn that off, and let's see if that was the problem. You know, a lot of apps have bugs, and optimization isn't going to be related to that. But one way to do the process elimination will be to turn that off. Well, what we think is going to be inconvenient to customers who run CPS 4.0 is if they just turn off memory optimization management altogether, they're going to lose scalability. The other 20 apps that are working fine all of a sudden won't be optimized. You may end up with more people on the server than you originally planned. So if you take this tool from RTO, just let's take that one bad apple out of the mix and see what goes on. If it turns out it is optimization, well, then we'll just leave it off. If it turns out it's not optimization, we'll put it back on just with a click of another button. We think I think the GUI is going to make that very, very easy for you to even further tune your system.
Yeah, okay. So we heard earlier that the T-scale holds its own sort of private cache of the DLLs with modified addresses, so that when a program calls the DLL, instead of loading the original one from disk, it sort of loads the T-scale modified version of the DLL with the modified address. And my question is, so how does that actually work? I mean, is T-scale, is it a service? Is it a file system driver? Or what actually happens that when an application calls a DLL, T-scale is able to provide its version instead of the sort of original on-disk version?
Excellent question. Okay, actually, so up to date so far, we've talked about a service. The service is the one who watches the executables load. We talked about an optimization routine, which is just a Windows executable. There is a third leg in this stool, and that is a file system filter driver. And on CPS 4.0, that's the ctx-altstr.sys driver, and that stands for alternate stream driver. And what it does is it watches for openings of files that are either executables or DLLs. If the DLL is one that's been optimized by memory optimization management, then the file system driver will do something called reparse, which all DDK programmers will probably recognize, in which we'll actually change it to be a different file, and we'll load this alternate stream again. Another great tool from sysinternals is a utility called Streams. And so if you have either T-scale or CPS 4.0 installed, if you run Streams on a particular file, you'll actually see the alternate streams that we use to implement the optimizations. It'll actually print out there. And maybe we can post something up on the website.
Yeah, we'll definitely, in the program notes, post all this stuff. So for everyone listening, you can just access that and get links to all the tools and downloads we talk about.
Yeah, so some of the questions you immediately would come to my mind is, wow, if you're changing this file around, what are you doing to our virus checkers? Well, the great thing about reparse, we go out every year to the, they call it Plugfest, where all the file system writer drivers go out there together, put all their filters on one machine, and we all test together and make sure that we don't interfere with anybody
else.
Sounds
like a fun group of people.
Oh, yeah, that's one heck of a week, yeah. And So the what happens is when you use reparse, it actually goes to the top of the chain, and every file system filter driver, including antivirus filters, which is that's how they implement themselves, get a chance to look at the new file, and then they'll actually virus check that new file as well. So we're kosher with all the antivirus. And one of the things that we don't do, though, is we don't do we won't optimize it if it's digitally signed. And there's two reasons for that. One is a behind-the-scenes thing with VeriSign, in which they're already trying to solve this problem just for digitally signed files themselves, and we do conflict with them. And so what's happened is we just leave those alone. So if you're on a this technology will also work on other machines, including web servers or Exchange servers and stuff like that. So if you're on a web server and you have some SSL DLLs, we just won't optimize them, just so that companies like VeriSign can verify the integrity of them, that they haven't been changed. But that's simply it. Once we pass it off to the optimized DLL, it runs just the way it had if you had loaded it from scratch.
And so the DLL version checking stuff, like as far as file integrity and that sort of thing, same deal, because if the original file is left in place and not changed, then all that sort of stuff does not get affected.
That's right. And the Windows loader who does his CRC checks and everything else like that, those all still work just the way they originally worked. So everything just fits in perfectly.
Okay, so I first heard of T-Scale, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I have no idea how long ago it was, but it was by a company called KevSoft. It was not by RTO Software. And of course, so your name is Kevin, KevSoft, that was your company. So how did we kind of transition from KevSoft to RTO Software?
Sure, you want to know how we changed that name right in the middle?
Yeah.
Well, I
like KevSoft because, you know, KevSoft, Bry Forum, you know, I'm into that, but whatever.
Well, and just as you're the main guy in BrianMadden.com, and it makes perfect sense what you're doing is you're selling Brian Madden, that makes perfect sense for you. Back then, I was a consultant, and so it was KevSoft. At one point, there were only two of us in the whole company, and part of the reason that the T-Scale technology was invented was companies back, it was founded in 2000, so in 2000, you still had these companies that had started up their websites, but right about now, you know, August of 2000, they were seriously looking to get some value out of them. Gone were the days where you didn't have to have any type of value proposition and stuff like that. Now they were looking to try to make sales, and there were a couple of companies who contacted me and said, my application is not working well on terminal services. It's just not scaling well. Is there any possible way that you can help me out? And so we went out. We did this consulting arrangement. And what we found was, boy, their app just didn't scale well at all. It was taking up gobs of page file. That was obvious. Other apps were working fine, like Microsoft Word, and they were running Word 97 at the time. Word was running fine. A few other apps were running fine. So we just did a deep dive and said, what's the difference? And noticed, hey, how convenient. Every single one of Word's DLLs back then was loading conveniently at the correct base address. Go look at the files using that tool I was telling you about, Dumpbin, and all of their base addresses had different addresses. With this company we were consulting to, you look at all of their DLLs, and all their base addresses were identical. So, you know, there was the germ for what the problem was on terminal services. So at that case, we manually rebased all the DLLs, and the issue went away. Word of mouth got out. Someone else asked me, and the same problem was there. I said, wow, this sounds like a product. So that's where the T-Scale product came from.
Why is it called T-Scale?
Terminal services scaler, I think, is what we were trying to hope you to see. At that point, instead of just me, now we got a company. So I hired a CEO to run it, hired a couple other developers, had to hire a salesman. And at this point, it was no longer about Kevin Goodman anymore. It was more about the team. And somewhere around then, someone came up with the idea to change the name to RTO, and the rest is history.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for all your time today.
Anytime, Brian. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. I learned a lot from this, and I've been, you know, focusing on Terminal Server and Citrix pretty much exclusively for a long time. But you know, I never grow tired of hearing these stories. So I really appreciate you doing this. And like I said to everyone out there, we will on the website, which is brianmedden.com/live. That's /LIVE. As a homepage for the show. We'll post all the links and the downloads and everything that Kevin talked about this week, and that's all there available for you to access. But with that, thanks again, Kevin, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Brian.
Originally recorded on August 11, 2005, its contents are copyrighted by the Brian Madden Company. The theme music was composed by Jack Madden. Thanks for listening.